So good afternoon. Thank you for coming to session 3332. We're going to be talking about accreditation as a means to transform public health. My name is Kay Bender. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Public Health Accreditation Board in Alexandria, Virginia, and I'll be moderating the session. Our speakers today, I'm going to go ahead and introduce, although I doubt either one of them need much introduction. You'll be hearing first from Jessica Kronstadt, who is the Director of Research and Evaluation for the Public Health Accreditation Board. And then you'll be hearing from Liza Corso, who's Senior Advisor for Accreditation and Performance Improvement at the Office of State, Tribal, Territorial, Local, Territorial, and Tribal Support. I'll get that right in a minute. At CDC, that does still, and I get probably most of you in the room know that. Liza doesn't need much introduction. She's certainly been around accreditation performance management for a while. I'd like to acknowledge the Vice Chair of the FAB Board of Directors, Dr. Bud Nicola. Bud, wave back there. He's in the back. And Dr. Bert Wilkie, who's in the front here, is a member of our accreditation committee. And so we're real pleased to have them in the audience, as well as a bunch of you who serve on FAB committees, are site visitors for us. You are the reason the process works, and we very much appreciate your service there. Normally at APHA, we have no financial relationships to disclose. We wish we did. But we don't. So, normally when you're at ABHA, we do some sessions around FAB and the current status and all that. And we've done that so many times that most of you in the room who are sort of FAB followers could probably and have probably given that presentation. So, what we wanted to do today is to take a deeper dive into the lessons we've learned so far from our evaluation of accreditation, and you'll see we have multiple facets for looking at the impact and the benefits of accreditation according to different audiences that we touch. And then both as part of my initial overview and then in hopefully a discussion with you at the end, we want to talk about some new accreditation-related work that FAB will be doing, and seek your ideas and feedback about some of those. And then Liza especially will be talking about transformative public health issues and national initiatives and how those work together to inform public health department accreditation from the future. And of course that last bullet about discussing feedback from the public health field, we will cover partly in the evaluation, but also some of that is the work we will ask you to do at the end of the work there. If you looked at the program, you saw that Les Beitsch was also supposed to be a speaker. Les is the current chair of the FAB Board of Directors and was unable to be here. We have incorporated what he would have discussed either in Jessica's presentation or in mine. We can't be Les Beitsch. So we will not be channeling him. We will not be trying to imitate him in any way because that is not possible. So by way of just a brief update, you have seen, if you've attended FAB 101 presentations, you've seen for the last several years the slide that the goal of the accreditation program, still voluntary, but the goal is to improve and protect the health of the public by advancing the quality and performance of the health department. We have this year, our board we've been through some strategic planning, going through some business planning. We are beginning to think about reaccreditation. And this year we took a bold step and said it is assisting. It's not the only thing, but it is a key trigger for transforming health departments. And that's just not Fab's words. And so part of what we'll be sharing with you today is why we feel like we could add that to our goal statement is because we're hearing that from the field. This is our accreditation activity. As of October 2015, there were 338, I thought this morning, there are 341 health departments going through the process. We have 79 accredited. And at the end of, not this week, but next week, we'll be announcing some more when Burt's committee finishes its work next week in reviewing the site visit reports that will be ready. If you're interested in this map, it really isn't fun to look at as a flat map, but if you go on our website, it is an interactive map. And you see the numbers on the various states. Those are the numbers of health departments that are accredited in that state. And if you hover over the numbers, it will tell you the name of the health department that's accredited. If you're an accreditation junkie and that interested in that level of detail. At the end of today, I'll talk a little bit about our beginning plans. Yes, can you believe it, for reaccreditation. We accredited the first health departments in 2013. It's a five-year process. And we will spend 2016 finishing up plans, developing and finishing up plans for reaccreditation so that we can get that out to the field. So the guys coming up in 2018 for reaccreditation, maybe that's some of you will have that information by 2017 at least. We're also working, many of you know, on a accreditation-related product. We're calling it that because we're not sure what else to call it at this point, for health departments serving less than 50,000 population. We have 39 health departments of that size currently in our EFAB system, and some of those are already accredited. We will never close the door for our health departments that size who want to go through the process as it's currently offered. However, we have heard from a number of smaller health departments that have 5, 7, 10 FTE staff, that they want to do something, but they don't think they're quite ready capacity-wise to go all the way through the accreditation process as it's currently set up. So we are just exploring what's something that's a pathway to accreditation, but not quite the full-blown thing might look like. FAB is also exploring the quality improvement aspect, and you'll hear why, I think, as you hear from both speakers today, and what accreditation and FAB as an organization in particular can bring to the field in the future. And then, how many of you have heard of the Foundational Public Health Services? Okay, a few of you. It's a new term, kind of new, that actually grew out of a 2012 Institute of Medicine report on investment in public health. It was called Investing in a Healthier Future. And one of the recommendations from that report was that, in their language, a minimum, a core set of public health services should be identified for the purpose of costing out those services so that a better case on the financial side, if you will, a stronger case, could be made to Congress to better support public health funding. That which, for those services which are not currently covered by categorical or programmatic grants. And so FAB just recently obtained a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We've already done an alignment document. All of the foundational public health services, as described by the early work, are included in the FAB standards and measures. So if you're working on accreditation, don't worry about the new language. They're there. But accreditation goes a little bit further in many areas because foundational public health services aren't about capacity or how something is done. And so we'll be working over the next 2.5 years to explore that further And we'll keep you apprised of that because some of you might want to be engaged in that work. Well, there's the picture of the study that I just shared with you. So let's move on now to Jessica Kronstadt, who's going to share some lessons learned from FAB's evaluations. Be thinking about those new FAB products, though, because at the end during discussion, it's going to be your turn to give us feedback. Jessica?
Thank you, Kay. There are seats in the front if you do want to come forward. We're not that intimidating, I don't think, so please feel free. So we ask our health departments who go through the accreditation process to be learning organizations. We ask them to identify areas for improvement and to act upon them. And we at FAB feel it's really important that we do the same thing. And we have a number of different sources of information that help us to gauge how the accreditation process is going. So I'm going to talk through each of these sources today. So the first is what we call our external evaluation because we have a contract with a research firm to conduct evaluation activities over a three-year period. Next, I'm going to talk about the annual reports. These are required documents for the health departments each year after they're accredited. And they really are designed to help the health department continue their journey of accreditation, continue their quality improvement journey. But they also give us some really good insights on what health departments are doing after they are accredited. So I'll share some of the exciting things that we're learning about the accredited health departments and what they've been up to recently. And then I'll talk about a special opportunity that we had for our health departments to really get more in-depth training and experience with quality improvement. Again, we don't want health departments to think, okay, you're accredited, you've reached the end. And we also know that in a lot of health departments, there's a lot of staff turnover. And so we want to make sure that momentum keeps going. And we had the opportunity to have a special training program that I'll discuss a little bit and what we've heard from the health departments who participated in that activity. And then finally, there's what we term internal evaluation. That just means that it's evaluation activities that are administered by FAB staff ourselves. So for all of these different aspects, there are kind of two buckets of things that we can learn. One, we can learn about the process and what's working well and where we could improve. And then two, we can learn about how the health departments, what their experience is and what benefits they have. So I will say that the process piece, that's like gold to us at FAB staff. We meet on a regular basis with the program team. That's where we're able to identify the areas for improvement. But even though it's great for us, it's not necessarily as interesting for you. Some of our process findings are pretty detailed, like make sure your site visitors have GPS so they don't get totally lost on the way to the health department. So I'm not going to talk very much today about the process findings. I'm going to focus a little bit more on the benefits. But at the end, I do want to bring it back together to talk about how we've taken what we've learned more on that process side to make some changes in FAB already, and then how that will play into some of the initiatives we'll talk about going forward. So I know you can't see this, but I think I'd be remiss as an evaluator not to show you our logic model, so I just want you to know that we do have a logic model, and this really does guide all of our evaluation thinking. And although there's a lot there, and part of the reason is there are so many different players involved. So when we developed this logic model, we wanted to represent the roles of the various entities that contribute to this process. So the ones in yellow on the top, that's FAB, that's our role, that's what we're doing. But then we have in pink a really important row, and those are our partners, which include many people in this room. It includes APHA, it includes NACHO and ASTO and the Public Health Foundation, the National Indian Health Board. It includes academics and people who provide technical assistance and other support. So that's a really key part of the whole accreditation system. And then on the bottom, you have the individual health departments who go through the process. And so this really maps out what we think are some of the short-term outcomes, the intermediate outcomes, and then ultimately how we think that may translate into some differences in the field. And a lot of these items that if you had X-ray vision and could read this are themes that are going to come out throughout this presentation about having better ability to understand and identify your organizational strengths and weaknesses, to be able to have better partnerships, to be able to have a quality improvement culture. And so you'll see those same terms, and they'll be in bigger font next time you see them as we go through. So I'm going to start with our external evaluation. We have a 3-year contract with a social science nonprofit organization called NORC at the University of Chicago. And I'm really going to be borrowing from their slides, and just to make it very clear that this is their work that I'm presenting, you'll see this logo showing up to represent the fact that this is from our external evaluation. They are focused both on the process and the short-term outcomes. They have a number of different data collection activities. For today, I'm only focusing on the piece of their data collection that's focused on the health departments. They are also talking to our accreditation committee, to our site visitors. But for now, I'll talk primarily about the health departments. And within that, they have a series of surveys. So they're surveying health departments at 3 different points in time. The most survey responses they've gotten at this point are from those health departments right at the beginning. So they've submitted their statement of intent, but they haven't yet come to training. So it's as close as we can get to a baseline, even though we know that for most health departments, by the time you've submitted your statement of intent, you've been living FAB for a number of years. Then they also survey health departments after they are accredited, shortly after they receive that decision, and then 1 year later. Now, at the moment, when I show findings, these are not necessarily the same people. Over time, over the course of their evaluation, they will be able to collect some longitudinal data, so they'll be able to see how one health department has changed from the beginning to when they're accredited to the following year. But at the moment, just think of them as 3 separate cohorts. And they also did some focus groups and interviews as well. So we're going to start with that first survey, and this is the one that has the most responses. And I should say that for all 3 of their surveys, they have a very high response rate, so over 80% each, so we can feel pretty good about their data. And this is looking at what the health departments who are in the beginning stages, why did they apply for accreditation? What do they think will happen when they go through the accreditation process? And the most common response, all of them have responded that they think it will stimulate quality improvement and performance improvement opportunities. So that's why, as Kay alluded to earlier, you'll see this theme about quality improvement is what our health departments think is the real point of accreditation, and that's what they go in expecting. We also have very high percentages of respondents who say they think it will allow them to better identify strengths and weaknesses, to improve the management processes of their leadership team, to have greater accountability and transparency, to improve the accountability, not only that's internal accountability, but as well as external accountability. And in addition, a very large percentage also believe it will improve their competitiveness for funding. So kind of keeping that in mind, that's what we asked. This is what we learned from the health departments just as they're about to get started. So they also asked a very similar question to those health departments who've been accredited for a year to say, okay, that's what you expected. Now what did you have? And I'm pleased to say that the results are really quite similar. So they really are getting what they thought they were signing up for. So we have 98% who agree that it has, in fact, stimulated quality improvement and performance improvement opportunities. It helps them to identify their strengths and weaknesses. It increases their transparency and accountability. It improves their management processes. And even the majority of them do think it has improved their competitiveness for funding. Not shown on this slide, but we also know that about 3/4 of them say that it has improved their relationship with other partners and with their governing entity, which is also a really important component of accreditation. So again, just digging a little bit more into the quality improvement realm. So we really wanted to understand a little bit more what their experience has been with quality improvement. And what is gratifying to see is already the health departments who have submitted their statement of intent are already doing some quality improvement work. 85% say that they use or strategies to monitor and evaluate effectiveness for quality. But when you ask that same question of health departments who have been accredited, all of them say that they feel that they've been able to implement strategies to monitor effectiveness. So we really do see, again, they're different cohorts of people, but we do see some differences. We also do see that they say 93% of them say that as a result of the accreditation process, they feel they have a strong culture of quality improvement. So we really, again, see this borne out, this idea that accreditation has the ability to really transform the culture and really make quality improvement a part of their lives. And we also wanted to dig a little deeper and figure out, well, what part of accreditation has led to this? And all of the respondents said that actually going through the process of selecting your documentation has helped identify areas for quality improvement. And this is really important. We don't we're very pleased to see this is what we expected to see, but we're glad to have this validation that it's not just an exercise in collecting documentation for the sake of collecting documentation so that you can check the box and do it. It really is about identifying gaps and then taking steps to address them. So that's really good to see that reflected in our data. They also, but in addition to that process, they also feel they get a lot from the site visit report. So we have a team of peers who go and review all of the documentation and then actually go on site and spend a couple of days at the health department and write up a report. And 92% of the respondents said that that also helped them really hone in on opportunities for improvement. And then the next step in the process is when our accreditation committee makes its determination about accreditation, they also provide some feedback in the letter. And that, again, for the vast majority of the respondents, that helped them, again, to really crystallize where they wanted to focus their attention going forward. There's also just some general satisfaction measures. So in the survey of the health departments who had just learned that they had been accredited, the majority of them, 92%, agree that they felt the accreditation fees were a good value. And they all agree that they made the right decision, so we don't have a lot of buyer's remorse. These surveys were primarily of the health department directors, so from their perspective, looking strategically across the health department, they feel pretty good about what they've invested in it. We know that there was a lot of concern going into this. Well, what about the, you know, unintended consequences, or what are the adverse effects of, you know, going through accreditation? And so in their survey, they ask an open-ended question, and this is 1 year out, so you've lived this, you really know what it is to be an accredited health department or beginning to get a sense of that. And they ask this question, and about half the respondents just left it blank altogether, and then most of the other respondents wrote in something, but what they wrote in is none or nothing. So we really only had two individuals who said that they had any adverse effects, and one of them was something along the lines of it took up a lot of time, which is not a surprise to us. We would be very surprised to hear that, you know, the health department said that it didn't take a lot of time. But in general, again, a lot of the concern going into it that there would be some unintended consequences, at least thus far among those relatively early adopters, they are not reporting that to NORC. And then I just wanted to share a little bit so you can get some of their perspectives in the way that the health departments themselves have characterized their experience. Again, this came up over and over again, that it really is one where the culture has changed. And I think this is the transformative piece, that it really is going from something where QI are a set of tools to QI is the norm. And then also we see the same that, again, it's making them more accountable. And I really like this last quote when one of the health departments said that they think it's one of the best leverage points to not only improve the public health system, but also to help them be successful in the health measures that they've put out in their community health improvement plan. So that is the whirlwind tour of the NORC evaluation. We do have one of their reports is posted on our website if you want to digest it in more detail or actually be able to read what is in some of the tables. So that will be available on our website. I'm going to shift gears a little bit to talk about our annual report. This is the part of the presentation that Les was going to do, but as Kay promised, I will not attempt any bad lawyer jokes or anything else. So you'll just get my own take on what's in the annual report. So some of you in this room have already experienced the joy that is the annual report process, but for those of you who are not as familiar with it, there are several different goals. So part of it is just something, and this is very typical across accreditation systems, is that there just needs to be a continuing communication with FAB about the fact that health departments remain in conformity with the standards and measures, that there hasn't been some dramatic change that's affected the ability of the health department to continue to perform at that same level. So that's one section of the report. The section two, which is the part that I get to work with more and the part that I think is a little bit more fun, is where the health departments, we're hoping that this reporting process will cause the health departments to reflect on what they're doing in terms of their quality improvement culture. And in reflecting upon it means they have to keep it on their radar. So we hope it will help to keep it at the top of their mind and keep pushing them forward on their QI journey. We also think it's an opportunity to help health departments begin to be thinking about reaccreditation, and in particular looking at some of the new areas, so the things that are in the standards version 1.5, which is a revised version, which is different from the version in which any of these accredited health departments have, they went through their initial review. We want to make sure they're thinking in those areas and they're beginning to work in those areas. So as part of this process, the health departments talk about some quality improvement activities they've engaged in. They talk about their quality improvement plan and performance management, but also some of the other key aspects of accreditation, primarily the community health assessment, the community health improvement plan, and the strategic plan. And what I'm going to talk about today are the results from the first 58 annual reports. So some health departments have now done two rounds of annual reports. Some are still on their first round. And I will note, and you'll see this in some of the other slides later, we did revise the annual report. Again, we wanted to, as part of our own quality improvement, we have an evaluation and quality improvement committee which looks at the reports and provides feedback to the health department. And we learned pretty quickly that these report templates weren't really hitting everything we thought we needed to make them as effective as they could be in helping advance health departments. We still think they're not as effective as they could be, but we really wanted, we made some changes to try to make them more effective along those lines. So in the latest version of the annual report, we do ask the health departments to reflect on where they are in their culture of QI. And we use the NATRO's roadmap to a QI culture as a way of getting some general assessment of how the health departments think they fit on this spectrum. And the NATRO roadmap has six different phases, so most of our health departments are in stage 4 or 5 of that six-point scale. But the interesting thing is we also, you know, it's not just say where you think you are on the scale, but we also ask them to reflect on the types of domains that really make up the QI culture and to talk about what they've done in the past and what they're planning to do in the next year. And so what's listed on this slide are those other key components. And just to share a couple of examples of the types of things that they talk about. So in terms of leadership, we have health departments talking about the fact that they meet regularly with their management team to go over the QI projects and to go over what the data in their performance management system, and that they bring this information to their boards of health. For champions, we have some health departments who talk about how we already have some some staff who have done a number of QI projects, and now what we really want those staff to do is focus on mentoring additional staff so that we can really build the base of our QI champions. We see a lot of different ways in which QI training happens. Some health departments are adding it to their orientation, you know, making sure right there on their orientation checklist that everyone gets at least an introduction to QI. For staff engagement, we hear about different ways of soliciting suggestions from across all staff. If you have something that you want to nominate as a particular QI project, here's a good way that you can get your voice heard regardless of where you sit in the health department. So those are just a few examples. One of the other things that we really do look for in the annual reports is also the linkages. So it's already spelled out in the standards and measures that the idea is you do your community health assessment, you understand the community health needs, you develop in your community health improvement plan some indicators of how you will see how you're making progress towards them, and then your strategic plan talks about the health department's role in working with the community to meet those goals. So we want to continue to see in these annual reports the linkages across the community health assessment, the community health improvement plan, and the strategic plan, but it really should also tie back to the performance management system. But really, that might be a place that not everything from your performance management system might get there, but if you have objectives in your strategic plan, are you really monitoring them? And then does it feed into the QI projects that you do? So that's really something, and some of our health departments are doing a fantastic job of really looking at it as all one system of understanding what should we be doing, how well are we doing it, where can we find those opportunities where we need to work harder or try something different. So in the annual reports, there is an opportunity to describe a quality improvement project. Initially, health departments have the option of describing multiple projects, so that's why there are a total of 85 have been described. And we ask a number of questions. We really want to understand why they decided to do this project and what tools did they use, how did they go about doing it. And here's just an overview so you can get a sense of what the health departments have been doing since they've been accredited. So one thing that's interesting to note is about a third of the projects came from something in the accreditation process. So either it was a measure that was listed in the site visit report as a measure they hadn't fully demonstrated, or even before that, when the health department did its initial self-assessment against the measures, they identified a need. The others come from a range of different topics. They can come from customer complaints or customer feedback surveys. They can come from community data. They can come from employee surveys. So we really see the full spectrum of different sources. And they really do address diverse topics. So almost half of them are really programmatic in focus, so they're looking at a specific environmental health program or a specific immunization program. But we do also have a lot more that are more administrative. So we have quite a few fit in that, what we can think of as, you know, domain 11, looking at your financial management systems or other administrative systems. And then workforce was the next most popular bucket in terms of the types of programs that they were working on. And there's a huge range, too, in terms of the approaches that they use. So the Plan, Do, Check Act was most commonly mentioned, but we also hear from there are some health departments using Kaizen, there are some health departments using Lean Six Sigma. So we really see a range there and a whole number of tools. And the most common would be things like your fishbone or cause and effect diagram and flowcharts and process mapping. But that is a small fraction of the list of the different tools that we're seeing health departments incorporate into their QI work. So this is the fun part for me, is looking at these examples. So I'm going to go through a couple of them. This is where I get so excited. You hear about all the great things that, that health departments are doing and how it's really made a difference. So the first couple are ones that are really the health department is looking inward about what they can do to make their organization a healthier place. So one health department talked about how they had done an employee satisfaction survey, and they noticed that their employees didn't feel safe. And so they did a QI project around that and noticed a couple of things, like we haven't ever done an active shooter scenario and people were worried about that. So that was an interesting, so they really built their QI project around that. We have others who wanted to have their staff be more engaged in recycling or other various conservation efforts. There was one where they talked about the processing for new hire, and we all know when you, in certain organizations, that can take a very, very long time just to go through the HR paperwork. And this health department said that it decreased that time by about 40%, which is a pretty meaningful difference. We had several that talked about also student interns and being able to have a better process for getting them in the door, getting them oriented, making sure all their paperwork is in process, just making that more efficient. And another popular one, and this is one, Kay, I'm sure we can really relate to, since we have a shared drive, an electronic file drive that has a whole lot of stuff on it. A couple of health departments have taken the time to do QI projects about making it so you can find things on your shared drive as opposed to just saving them there. And one health department said that when they reorganized their shared drive, they not only did it make it easier to find things, but it reduced the electronic storage space, and so they were anticipating needing to get and buy additional servers, and they were able to save that cost because they just were able to more efficiently use their current resources. Another one, this may be one that you can relate to, was one health department noticed that they weren't doing a very good job tracking their spending on federal grants, and you know what happens, Liza, you can close your ears for this, but if at the end of the year you haven't spent all your money, you have to give it back, and nobody wants to give it back. So how can the health department better track how they're spending their money along the way so that they actually are able to use their full resources and don't end up being surprised either spending down too quickly or spending down not quickly enough, and so making sure that they had a better process for estimating those budgets. There's a lot about data, making it being able to be more responsive to requests for data. There was one about death data. So this health department said that it was could take 9 months or up to a year, year and a half from the time they got their ICD-9 coded information till they could release death data. And they thought they might be able to get that down to something like a week, which is a pretty huge difference, you know, in terms of their efficiency and being able to process those data. So there are a lot of opportunities there. And then also just looking more at the services they provide, you know, helping to improve the coordination of various services and outreach that they provided to support breastfeeding women, animal bites, recognizing the need to have them be reported in a timely manner, making sure that you have your tobacco clerks, having the appropriate licenses. There was one that looked at a specific food establishment violation that was really common. They checked, saw from their data that it was really frequent, and they were able to identify some root causes. And then also just making sure that they're collecting customer satisfaction surveys in a timely and consistent way across the health department. So as you can see, I hope you can see, this is kind of the fun part when you get to see here some real examples of how they've made a difference. In terms of the community health assessment and the community health improvement plan, they talk a lot about working with their partners and collective impact models. We also, there are about 9 health departments I noticed in the last one that talk specifically about coordinating with their hospitals on the community health needs assessment, engaging new partners, particularly tribes, new ways of getting data available. And then there's some exciting, most of them also say, we ask if you've made progress towards your community health improvement plan indicators, and most say they have. And this is just one example where a coalition did a number of different things, and they outlined things, everything from the first bike lane to actually having more nutrition information in restaurants. And they were really proud because their obesity rates had gone down slightly, but they had gone down during that time when just about everywhere else in the state they had gone up. So really is making a difference in the lives of their communities. We do, as I said, as part of preparing health departments for reaccreditation, we ask, are you working in these different areas, many of which appear in the standards version 1.5, and you'll see that across the board they're working in various ways, you know, everything from emergency preparedness to integrating public health and healthcare, and then climate change, which is one that actually we made it to the list because so many people wrote it in 2014 when it wasn't on the list, but we added it to one of the topics now. And then another thing that we're excited about at FAB is that they're sharing what they're learning. So we ask them, what are you doing to share with other health departments what you've done in QI or what you've done in accreditation? And they all, across the board, are doing something, whether it's just a one-time consultation or if it's more extensive mentoring with other health departments to help them on their journeys. So I'm going to talk really quickly about the QI Leaders Academy. This was a special opportunity that we had with funding from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we were able to implement this in partnership with Continual Impact. And we made this opportunity available to all accredited health departments at the time. They could apply. 12 of them were able to participate in the program, and then they were joined by an additional 10 health departments who had received training earlier, but they participated in part of this. And as part of the program, they had really extensive training and coaching in QI. They actually had a QI coach come to the health department and help the QI leader lead a Kaizen event. And then they also did a lot on the QI planning and how you really, that change management and how you help to make QI part of the culture. And again, they did some pretty exciting projects too about streamlining the process for health alert networks. One health department was really concerned about the backlog of STD investigations, and they are working on a Kaizen project to really reduce the time for that. Responding to grants more efficiently, this is a common thing. We've seen a couple of projects where they've actually, just the process of when you get a request for proposal, how can you respond more quickly? And then also looking at ways to remove silos within the department so that if you have people coming in for services, you're able to communicate better as a health department. So I'm going to talk, so each time I'm going to, it gets even shorter how much I have to say about each topic, so have no fear, the end is near. But in terms of the internal evaluation, so as I said, this is what we do, that this means that it's, these are surveys that are administered by me or my colleagues, and they really do make a difference in terms of the decisions we make. How to improve our process on a daily basis. So what I'm going to talk about at the moment is the health department surveys. These are from health departments right after they've completed their site visit. But we also do survey site visitors, we do training evaluations, and we survey our own staff after every site visit as well. So just the very quick finding here is, again, and this is, we're asking this to the accreditation coordinators, so they're the ones who have the boots on the ground. And again, they all feel pretty comfortable that they made the right decision. We and the ones who've disagreed, there have been about two, and usually just a timing thing. We applied too soon, and that's where they have some regrets. But really importantly, 80% of them strongly agree that it's improved the performance of the health department, and the remaining all agree that it had that positive effect on their performance. So I just want to take a minute to talk about how what we do with these findings to really, you know, to get back to my earlier point about how these are really, this is information we use, it's not just information we collect. So we've made a ton of changes to our internal processes. Probably it's most obvious if you look at our training, which is very different now than it was when we started. We have different tip sheets. One thing that we've heard as a concern from both health departments and site visitors, they really want to make sure they're assessing conformity correctly. And so we have a lot more exercises where we put our site visitors to the paces and make them review sample documentation to really make that as robust a process as possible. We also have, for ourselves, one of the comments we heard is, it feels like we submit our documentation and then it takes a while. So we committed to doing a QI project to see where we could identify ways to streamline our processes and to do things like book travel earlier and just make it so that there's more certainty and less time lags for FAB, for the health departments, and the site visitors. We also, you'll see if you're familiar with version 1.5 of our standards and measures, those really, the changes in version 1.5 really emerged from the feedback that we received from the field. So part of that was new content areas that the field said, you know, you really need to address this more explicitly. But also, I think probably the single most common set of questions we were getting before are how many examples for this measure and what's the timeline? So we've really reformatted the standards and measures so that's more clear. We also just released this June our revised guide to accreditation. And what we really focused on here, and again, this was based on what we learned from our evaluation findings, is helping health departments to be more ready before they begin. Because we had been noticing there are some health departments that were pushing the button a little bit too early. So we not only revamped the checklist that health departments can do, but we've also changed the requirements when you submit your application. It used to be that you had to have your community health assessment, health improvement plan, and strategic plan. You still need all of those, but based on what we've learned, we've also now have the health department needs to state that they're well underway on some other things, like the workforce development plan and the QI plan and the performance management system. So you can't get too far in the process without doing some of those fundamental pieces that we know take some time. Similarly, we have formalized our extension process if something out of the health department's control happens. And we also made an inactive status so that if a health department realizes that they are not quite ready, that they have the ability to press the pause button and really take the time to do the documentation right. And we changed the timelines for some of the earlier stages, again, looking at our data on how long health departments were taking, as well as some really targeted work that NORC did. So here are some of the ways that we've already taken some steps, and these are just some of the examples of the concrete steps we've taken. And the last is, this is the ongoing work. So Kay foreshadowed this once, and she told you to be thinking about it. So I'm doing the second foreshadowing to really build the suspense for the discussion at the end. But as I said, we really are continuing to think about how we can support performance management and QI among health departments. One thing we have seen, which shouldn't be a surprise, but is a little when you see it in the numbers, there are a lot of new health department directors, and we all know that when you have a new health department director, that can change the culture. And so what do we need to do to make sure that that level of commitment to QI keeps going in the right trajectory? And then we also, Kay mentioned this earlier, the small health departments, what can we do with them? So we're doing great with the states. We're doing great with the large local health departments. They are in our systems in large numbers, and we want them all to be in our system. But we do have a smaller percentage of the health departments. As Kay said, some have done it and been successful, but it is one of the things that we're thinking about based on our data and based on what we're hearing, how can we respond to their needs? So again, be thinking about those questions, and that's my final teaser for the discussion at the end.
Great. Of course, some of the more popular tools do relate to the performance management collaborative work that PHF and others pulled together, and we actually supported a kind of a refresh of those tools and that framework. And I actually showed the framework slide up there. We also know that there were some grantees that had some really good use with, you know, results-based accountability as well as the balanced scorecard. And so I think there wasn't necessarily only a single tool there, but that's something that quickly answers your question.
Other questions?
Yes.
So we just had a session on that, in fact. So through APHA, we have an accreditation support initiative. So maybe that was that one slide I skipped over that I perhaps shouldn't have. Since 2012, we have been providing APHA with funds that they have then provided as part of what they refer to as an accreditation support initiative. So affiliates can apply, be funded through that, and then use that small amount of funding to foster work on accreditation readiness in their states.
I was just wondering, though, if within the standards for accreditation,
Well, it's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis throughout the standards and measures on partnerships, and certainly the state affiliates could be one of those in several places. But you raise a good point. I don't know that we've ever actually called that out as a suggestion, which we certainly could do. It's a great suggestion. Thank you. Other questions for the speakers? If not, I'm going to put you to work. Yes, Lon. So I'll take the cost piece, and then Jessica can answer the staff morale piece, because yes, we do have a little bit of early information on that. The cost piece for us has been a tough piece to evaluate, because it depends on who you ask as to whether preparation, some of the elements that are required for preparation for accreditation are really only for accreditation, or should health departments have been doing some of those anyway? So, for example, the community health assessment and improvement plan. I mean, if you go to school to learn about public health, that's Public Health 101. And so one set of folks have said we shouldn't count that as a cost for accreditation because health departments should be doing that anyway. However, for a health department who's not done that or not done in a long time, if the trigger or the catalyst for doing it was accreditation, then to them it's cost. But there are many, many elements of our standards and measures that kind of fall in that piece. So that one's been tough for us. We at FAB have been very, I think, I hope, straightforward and upfront about the fact that it's going to take time. And depending on where your health department is when they start, it may cost more in terms of fiscal resources and in terms of human resources than it will another health department. But we've made no additional effort to quantify that. I suspect as we go forward there will be public health researchers, system researchers that will do that for us, which will probably be better anyway. In terms of the staff morale, Jess, you want to take that one?
Sure. So we do have some early findings about that. Even going back to our beta test, we asked health departments at every step in the process, how do you think this has affected morale? And we thought you might find some times where it would actually have a negative effect because it's so much work, but we really found it was positive. What we've heard is, you know, health departments are so excited. One of the things we hear a lot is, oh my goodness, now I understand what everyone else in my health department does. And I think that's one of the ways in which it translates into a positive morale effect.
It's too early, Lana, so it's too early for us to report on this yet, but at some point we will check on whether our health departments perceive that the fact they're accredited had any effect on recruitment and retention, because we certainly know that's been the case on the healthcare side. So, yeah, so Jim Franco.
So regarding the incentives question, have you thought about assigning additional points or a preferential path for funding for this program that are accredited. Now, I raise that point with some limitation because I understand the risk of incentivizing those that are already far ahead and leaving behind those that are even more behind than they are now. But nevertheless, when we talk to policymakers, they want to know what's in it for me, and if you can put money, they hear that very well.
Yeah, so that is probably one of the oft-mentioned incentives that we discuss both internally and hear from others in terms of either extra points or higher consideration or a selection, you know, a criteria for selection. It cannot obviously be one of the formulaic grants. It has to be something that's more competitive in nature and probably would be most well suited to a cooperative agreement or maybe of a demonstration site grant program where we do want to select maybe a small number of high-performing health departments to do a certain type of work, and using accreditation status could be certainly one of those top pieces of criteria. And I don't want to go out on a limb, but I will say that I think there's one of our parts of CDC may actually be doing this at some point in the very near future. So I think that's going to send a pretty big message when the first one gets released that actually does include this within an FOA as a big point of consideration within that selection process. And then, of course, as accredited health departments, as those numbers grow, I think the potential for doing that will grow. Right now, it's hard to have those conversations internally when we, most of our funding, of course, goes directly to states, really only have 9 states, and that even includes D.C., because that's what, or 8 states and D.C. that are accredited. It's hard to point to that as a real viable option for selection. But I think that will continue to grow.
Hmm? Yeah, the opening session yesterday, Illinois Association of Directors of Health, and Illinois Health Association is the Director of Health in Illinois. And she threw out a group of 8,000 jobs lost in public health in the last 4 years. And some of that's actually even associated with the Affordable Care Act, making all the functions, privatizing it or Medicaidizing it or whatever. How do you see that impacting accreditation? Saying health departments about losing staffs, maybe a lot of staff in their own region, county, city. The mayor says, well, everybody's on Medicaid now, so you don't have to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. We'll just send them into the Medicaid system. I'm just throwing that out.
No, it's a great question. And so I'm going to answer it in a way that's going to sound a little cynical, but that is not my intention. Okay, so because this is one of those things that we will have data to look back later, so that right now it's just sort of what we're hearing, right? So for some health departments who we think are more progressive in their thinking, they are using the accreditation standards and measures, whether they're accredited or not, but they're using the standards and measures to say this is what public health does, either alone or in partnership. And they've used it to, and this is the phrase that we hear a lot, to help define what their health department's going to look like on the other side of whatever their own transformation and reform is. And we've got several case studies, actually, noting that, and that's particularly true if, and you alluded to this a little bit when you talked about Medicaid reimbursement, that is particularly true if the health department has been asked to divest themselves of clinical-based services. They've used, because we don't talk about clinic services at all. We understand that health departments do that, but we are about population health. And so a lot of health departments have come to us and said, will you help us talk through with us how we can use preparation for accreditation or at least the standards and measures to define what public health might look like on the other side of whatever we're asked to reorganize. So that's sort of the pro side. On the negative side, quite honestly, this is where I'm going to sound a little cynical. Health departments going through that is tough. I've been there, done that. It is very tough. And so some of them use that as their rationale for not wanting to work on accreditation because they don't have anybody to work on it and no time to do it. And I'm not suggesting those are even. We hear more of the former than the latter, but we do hear about the latter. And I think health departments, that's one of the reasons it's voluntary, so that health departments can choose what's right for them given the climate that they're in. Quite frankly, one of our hopes for accreditation is that it would strengthen the health department's image and credibility and transparency and accountability. And their very open quest to be a different health department in the future based on their own assessment and their own work with their policymakers, so that they don't continue to be cut and go out of business. But time will only tell. So we see both.
So, yeah, if I could add two other points. I know we've heard from health directors both at the state and local level that accreditation, they might all be in meetings with their, the state cabinet or with their mayor or with their board of health, and they're being asked to make yet another round of cuts. And if they have the accreditation standards or their accreditation status to point to as something that will be impacted by a certain cuts, that actually could have a protective effect on what they need to retain. And in fact, I know I'm looking at Mary Davis, who did some research in North Carolina, looking specifically at preparedness, and of course, the North Carolina accreditation program, which has some real similarities to what FAB accreditation does look like, and did find that there was a protective effect of the North Carolina accreditation status on some of the preparedness capabilities. So we're hoping that as time evolves, that we could actually learn from some of those same opportunities to do that research and be able to make those claims.
Yeah, our goal is to support health departments to be strong in spite of what they're going through fiscally right now. But that, of course, plays out differently. I'm going to move on because we have 5 minutes. And I really don't, there's two things I want to, one thing I want to say and two things I want to get quick feedback about. The one is if you want a copy of these slides, rather than our bringing handouts for you then to have to schlep home, there are two ways you can request a copy of the handout version of the slides. One is we have a sheet up here. You can put your name and your email address, and we'll just email it to you, and that way you don't have to take it home. We don't have to bring it here. There are also copies of my business card. So if you don't want to leave your email address lying around on our piece of paper, you can take my card and email me and ask for it. So good enough. Two real quick things I want feedback about, and I know you have other sessions to go to. Reaccreditation. So whether you're from an accredited health department or whether you worked with us on accreditation or whether you've been involved in other accreditation activities for academia or health systems or whatever, I want to test a couple of concepts with you. Hear me clearly. These are concepts we're testing with you. Does not imply what we're going to do. We don't know what we're going to do yet. The committee hasn't met. But one concept. Some accrediting agencies have a total repeat of initial accreditation for reaccreditation. They just do it again. FAB is not thinking about that. We're thinking about building on the initial accreditation and asking health departments to work with us to move their work a little further down the road, a little further down the road with their partnerships, a little further down the road with their CHON CHIP, what the CHON CHIP was intended for, not the process of how it got done, a little further down the road on their QI. One of our staff calls it QI on steroids. That could be a little illegal somewhere, I don't know, but some actual reporting on health status. So if you picked this to work on in your CHIP, now that you've been accredited for 5 years, how's that working for you? So that we can get some sense of whether the CHIP process actually is making a difference and whether there's some health status indicators, there's some commonalities. What's your initial sniff test on those concepts? I'm seeing some thumbs up. Okay, thumbs up? Cautions. Cautions or concerns about that, yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
So for reaccreditation for health departments accredited under 1.0, do they have to be 1.5?
That's what I'm saying. We're developing what reaccreditation. Some would say yes, but we're saying maybe not. Maybe we want to go to a to reaccreditation looking altogether different, but building on whether it was 1.0 or 1.5. Just concept. We haven't decided yet. I want to be really clear about that. Yes. That is a great point. That's the kind of feedback we need. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to get you out of here. I'm not going anywhere, so if you want to talk to me afterwards, fine. But I want to get you out. Second bullet. What do you think about the concept of something that is an accreditation similar, not less than, not lower than, but a pathway to accreditation, but that starts at a different place for health departments that say have 5, 7, 10, 12 FTEs. Yes, thumbs up, yes. Any reservations about those concepts? Yeah, you have reservations, yeah. We do too, yeah. Yeah. All right, it's 4:00, I need to let you go. Let me say, I don't know if there's another session in here. Does anybody know? Okay. So we're going to hang around if you want to come talk to us or if you want to volunteer to work on any of this stuff. Thank you so much.